what's up?
What's up, what's up?
You tuned in to 560 KLZ.
KLZ?
I'm a uniter.
I'm a uniter.
I'm your host, Reggie Rocco.
Yeah. Yeah. KLZ. Yeah. Yeah.
So right about now, we want everybody, I mean everybody, stand up.
Stand up.
Hold your hands up high. Lock arms. This is about America, baby.
Yeah.
We bringing people together.
I'm a uniter.
Woo! 560 KLZ. I'm United. It's Reggie Rocco. I got Luke in here. Anthony, what's up?
What's up? How you doing?
Good, man. Like, okay, let's get down to this, man. You know, we got some special guests coming in here a little later.
I'm excited.
Good, great, great. I know people are gonna ask some questions, and I'm gonna sit back and mediate and do what I do. Have you noticed, man, like the news lately? Like, have you heard the latest on the immigration thing?
Which part? There's so much.
Oh, man. Did you see the tents that's supposed to be tents?
They're nicer than my apartment, Reggie. No, they got more amenities than my place.
Dude, did you, the couches and the bed, TVs. Big screens, Xbox.
Wow.
I don't even have an Xbox, yo.
Wow. No, that's...
I was on the list, and I don't have an Xbox, man.
That's a darn shame. We're going to have to fix that. One thing that drives me nuts is... You look around our streets right here. I bet you if I look, turn around and look out that door right now, I'm going to find homeless VA
right
vets
right
sitting out there.
Right.
And we're putting out these tents and these campsites for the illegal immigrants. I mean, it really bothers me.
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely have to get into that.
We
got some guests in the studio.
Hello, look at this, guys.
Man.
Welcome.
And some heavyweights in there. Yeah, they look like models, don't they?
They do. GQ models. Yeah, it's great.
Well, you know, this show, we have them all. We have Democrats, liberals, Republicans, everybody. I'm a uniter. This is how we do it. So for my guests, let's do an introduction. Can you hear yourself?
I can.
Go ahead. You sound out first. What's your name? What you do? Why you're here?
What's my jam? I'm Peter Lafari, and I serve as executive director for Maker Housing Partners. We're the housing authority up in Adams County. We own, operate, develop vibrant multifamily affordable housing, and I also do policy work with Evelyn at the Common Sense Institute to try to change system dynamics.
Who is Evelyn? Who was this lady?
I don't know, but she's a sight for sore eyes. Wow. I'm just going to be real, y'all. I know you can't see her out there in the radio audience.
Oh, that's power sitting right there, buddy. Go ahead, Evelyn. In case people that don't know you, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Oh, gosh, you guys are so funny. I'm Evelyn Lim, so I work with Peter at the Common Sense Institute. I'm a fellow there. I also work at the American Cornerstone Institute, which is the nonprofit think tank started by Dr. Ben Carson. So I had worked with Dr. Carson when he was Secretary of HUD. So I heard you guys were talking about homelessness when we came in.
Yeah. So you know what? Why don't you go ahead and take it from there? I mean, tell us what you guys do, because you know this person right here, she's the stuff right here.
Sounds like a great experience.
Yeah.
Talk to us.
Let us know what's going on.
Well, thank you. We are so excited to be here just because we, you know, Peter and I have been thinking about and talking about and studying a lot of these issues that are affecting Coloradans.
Right.
Last year, we did a study on housing affordability for the Common Sense Institute and looking at really what were the causes of why housing is so expensive here. We can't build an affordable housing, which is what Peter's doing, in any kind of easy or fast way, which is really hurting our communities. And this year, we're both at Common Sense, unfortunately not working together on the same project, but both of us studying different things. And I'm doing a free enterprise fellowship there, and I look at different topics in Colorado that are affect our citizens and how the free enterprise system can work to better opportunities and our communities here.
I have a quick question to clarify. When you say affordable housing, I feel like a lot of that comes with some negative connotations, just inherently. So when you're talking about affordable housing, what is that definition to you guys and, you know, your cause? What does it mean?
Yeah, I'll jump in there. That's a great question. You know, essentially, it's housing for Coloradans. It's Main Street workers. It's our parents. It's our grandparents. It's us. It's our kids when they're stepping out and going to school. And so we've just decided, for whatever reason, in this state, really in this country, that housing is somewhat of the enemy, and that we're anemic to producing any of it. And so essentially all housing in the United States, and Colorado is no different, is at its max cost, because it's the last sector within the global economy to be disrupted, modernized. You know, so we're still building homes the same way we built them back in the 50s. And it's not because our great businesses don't have innovation just waiting to be unleashed. It's because we're over-regulating. We don't have a free market in housing. We're actually more like the Europeans, where any scintilla, any little issue, concern, and we just shut the whole process down. There's no cost-benefit analysis, and so we just have stopped building. And so we have to build homes for every single type of Coloradan. Traditionally, we talk about area median income and aligning it to individuals' incomes. But the vast majority of folks that live in affordable housing are working. They're working multiple jobs. We just haven't had the ability, because of the scarcity, to be able to provide enough home products so that there's some competition and parity, and then we have some stabilization in cost. And so we're all competing for a very scarce resource.
Is that your organization going to be able to help the homeless?
We help a lot of homeless individuals get housed. It's not our bread and butter focus at the Housing Authority. We're a real estate engine.
Right.
We develop multifamily primarily for individuals and families, but we have a ton of folks that were previously unhoused.
So how do you suggest we build houses now to make them more affordable?
Well, I think the first thing we need to do is we need to follow suit with all the other sectors of the economy and drive consistency, clarity, and predictability. It's really difficult for small business owners, for any entity to enter a market when there's such volatility and unpredictability, right? And so what's going on is because we treat each and every different local government, every local government treats their zoning and entitlement land use processes differently, there's no economies of scale. So imagine if, you know, I use a Ford example, the Ford F-150, number one selling vehicle in the United States, about $60,000 average sale price, beautiful vehicle, right? We essentially built two of them. There's a ton of trims underneath them, but the production lines are really, you have your California emissions, Colorado adopts that, and then you have your standard for everyone else. If we were to bring houses to market, if we bring those Ford trucks to market the way we build homes, just in Colorado alone, we'd have to build 64 different versions of it.
Wow.
Because we have 64 different counties. And then we could go into all the additional cities. And so if we could bring it to market, there are cars built by hand, right? They're called Bentleys, and they're $500,000. So is there any surprise that our homes are just so exorbitantly priced? So what I would say is we need to have more, at a minimum, regionalism. So like here in Aurora, Denver, as we move down to Lone Tree, which I'll give a shout out to Mayor Millette, she's crushing it, doing good stuff. But ultimately, we need to have more consistency so that more competition can thrive in an open, free market where we can have costs come down per unit. So we got to do that. Secondly, we have to ask ourselves as Coloradans, why are we so darn scared of housing? And why do we do it so darn differently than we did for our grandparents, right? The last major housing crisis we had in our country was when the brave men and women came back from World War II. We liberated the world, but we had 10 cities on the mall. We had tons of homelessness. And what we did was we democratized housing. We opened up free markets and we built at scale. And we need to do that again. And we need to believe in people. We need to allow folks to maximize their holdings and not treat our neighbors' assets as if we can influence them, because that's just not American.
Go ahead, Anthony.
That's all great stuff. So what do we need to do
legislatively to try and make that stuff happen? What can the citizens here do?
So first thing we need to do is we need to nip this condo defects dynamic in the bud, right? So essentially, condos used to play about 20% of overall housing stock. It's less than 10% now. Over 90% of developers are being sued when they create attached product, right? So condos, townhomes, party line, it's kind of the term we use in the business. But, you know, right now it is so litigious that developers and entities are not entering that market, and we're eliminating really important entry points for new buyers and also downsize opportunities for our seniors. We have so many overhoused seniors. And so I'd say that. Secondly, I would say that we need to look at upzoning. We need to look at upzoning in our commercial areas. You know, California is the brunt of many jokes for good reason, because as the great Winston Churchill said, right, Americans will do the right thing after we've exhausted all other options. So in California, the Titanic has sunk, right? It's $1 million to build a unit, and they're just like uncle, okay? So they're deploying very surgical statewide interventions to create that stable market. And so we also need to embrace offsite building methodologies. Because they're not Soviet era block replicated brutalism concrete monoliths to folks that don't want to buy them. And so what we need to do is embrace offsite building and then allow our new labor force to learn how to build these buildings so they can house their communities.
So when you say offsite building, so are you talking like prefab?
Yeah, warehouses. Yeah, same way we build homes on site, we just build them in warehouses with robotics, basically automobilize. Right.
American companies?
Yeah, absolutely. Coloradan companies. Oh, okay. We can be first movers in Colorado.
Actually, not too long ago, I saw an article on a company that is doing something similar where they have an assembly line basically and cranking out some houses.
Absolutely. I could name off a bunch.
That's great.
Buna, one in Pueblo, one here in Denver. We have all the inherent talent and ability. We just have to tap into it.
So how do we get a ballot initiative out there to start making this stuff happen? Because it seems like it's common sense to me.
The playing field is shifting. You know, there used to be this ideological fault line where it's like one party does housing, the other party doesn't. And what Evelyn and I found out was actually like, you know, when we come together and synergize and look at root cause analysis and drive value chain and value proposition, we come together and we can collaborate on solutions either through ballot initiatives or at the General Assembly. And so I could reel off a bunch, but I'd like to give Evelyn some chance to jump in.
Go ahead,
Ms.
Queen.
I bring Peter, because I don't really have to talk if he's with me. Everything that we did. So, you know, Peter, the whole concept of that fellowship was really to bring people from different viewpoints together and challenge us to come up with some solutions for Colorado. And so, you know, I was, as Reggie knows, I was a Trump appointee. Mm-hmm. Peter's not on the same ideological side as me, but we really enjoyed working together because the common thread was we need solutions. We can't just talk like esoterically. And the innovation part is really something that I truly believe in. It's something that we worked with Dr. Carson. And, you know, the idea that these prefab houses, they're not, you know, what we used to think of. And so there's this kind of idea that, you know, they're not as good as kind of site built. But what we found in the, you know, recent past is that they actually appreciate at the same rate. You know, they're so good, they can even be more energy efficient because you can actually build them in a factory. And so you're saving on energy efficiency there. And then, you know, one of the things that I think is really important is that we kind of do this through the General Assembly. Okay. So I think that there needs to be debate, and I think that we need to do it right for Colorado. Sometimes with these ballot initiatives, and I would love to talk about some of those, is that you can't, you know, people really don't understand the nuances of it. And I've been through this ballot initiative process here in Colorado, and it is a bear. And so I actually think that that needs to be revamped a little bit. But
so what about the actual company's building, the builder's building, are you going to have like bids for? Is it a specific company or what?
Well, I think what we have to do is what Peter was talking about a little bit, is we have to change the system to allow them to do that. So right now we have all of these different requirements county by county so that they're not able to basically unlock that assembly line efficiency. So we need to really start at that regulatory level.
Yeah, it's a building code dynamic. It's a building code. It's also land use planning and zoning. You know, we need to share more of our land use planning and zoning codes regionally, and it's still going to be Colorado Beautiful. You have to be competitive, right? And
right.
So the product is going to be dynamic. It's going to be desirable. It's going to be, if you care about climate change, then you want to have off-site building because they're more efficient, as Ev mentioned. You know, they're going to go in site, on-site faster. The other thing is that we just don't have enough talent and labor for localities and planners. You may have seen how Denver's really, really far behind in approving development projects. And they're saying, look, we need more labor. We need more FTE. Well, I would interject and say, actually, you don't need as much labor if you started to slash the unnecessary regulation. Because right now, if you're an architect, if you're a planner, and you're working in the high country, let's say you're a consultant, and you want to start to consult to be able to help with surge capacity in the Front Range, you have to learn all the codes over again. The opportunity costs just don't pencil out. And so if you look at this as a CEO, you start to see a ton of redundancies and a lot of opportunity to crash the timeline to be able to drive home production in a far more efficient manner. I mean, the majority of the homes we build in this country that we've built have come from catalogs, right? The Sears and Roebuck catalog, Walk Around Wash Park, all those desirable homes, you know, those are illegal to build today. So we have to, you know, we have to ask ourselves, how do we get off, you know, out of whack here, and how can we get back in?
Okay, so how much are these homes going to cost? And well, I guess we'll get to this when we get back. The other question is going to be, are they going to look alike? Are they going to be identical? Or do they have any type of person?
Oh.
So this is I'm Ian Ider, Reggie Rocco. We'll be right back. 560 KLZ.
AM 560 KLZ, your home station.
How do you do it? Some people read pamphlets, others go online. What works for you?
The Blue Book or visiting knowyourjudge.com.
Voting for judges is extremely important to all Coloradans.
You have the job of voting to keep or dismiss judges. This November, make an informed choice.
Visit knowyourjudge.com and get the simple, impartial, nonpartisan facts.
Sponsored by the Colorado Broadcasters Association and the Office of Judicial Performance Evaluation.
Are you seeing the stock market in the news every day and feel a little lost? You don't have to be. Tune in to Investing and Trading Live, sponsored by Online Trading Academy, to discover proven stock market strategies right here on KLZ 560, Fridays from noon to 1.
We stand on the shoulders of giants. Young Jim Blaine fought in four of the Pacific Theater battles during World War II. On the next America's Veteran Stories with Kim Munson, we are rebroadcasting an interview that we recorded with Jim in 2020. He fought at the Battle of Iwo Jima, which was a gigantic and very necessary undertaking. You can meet Marine veteran Jim Blaine Wednesday, October 26th at the USMC Memorial Luncheon. You'll find more information at kimmunson.com. Be sure to tune in to Jim Blaine's interview Sunday, 3 to 4 p.m. right here on KLZ 560 and KLZ 100.7 FM.
Join us on October 22nd for Life Surge Denver. Tim Tebow, Willie Robertson, Priscilla Shire, and more than 10 other leading Christian speakers will be there live and in person for a one-day workshop and business experience. Life Surge presents practical biblical strategies to help you grow your faith, business, wealth, and kingdom impact to live the life you've always wanted. For more info, visit lifesurge.com or just text the word tickets to 52236. Text the word tickets to 52236 for the latest ticket information.
Oh boy, what's going on today, isn't it? 560 KLZ, I'm Ian Ayers, Reggie Rocco, I got Lou, I got my boy Anthony, and you know the special guests we have here. You know, these people right here are very smart.
Incredible.
And Luke, you had a question, and if you could address the question we were talking about before break, if you remember it, is are they identical? And how much are they going to cost?
Yeah, so they do absolutely do not need to be identical. There can be, you know, reasonable variations in design and aesthetic and you know, just how they sit on land. There's plenty of opportunities for customization within standardized dynamics. And so the other dynamic there, too, is that, you know, the price is relative to commodity volatility. So it's difficult to give you an exact number. But if we can start to produce homes in the threes to fours, that's a strike range for a broad swath of Coloradans to be able to engage into home ownership.
Okay. Luke, do you want to ask that question?
Yeah. Sorry, I had to take a call. I was doing producer stuff. My question was, if we automate the home building process, that's taking a lot of the labor force out of the job market, especially, I mean, just between, Elizabeth and Franktown, they have a plan for approximately 1,600 homes. Yeah, that's a lot of working hours for a lot of people. If we automate that whole process, what are we going to do about that job loss?
Yeah, it's important. We're actually all about creating opportunities for employment in this beautiful trade space, because you can earn a living. Let's say, you know, you're coming home from incarceration. This industry is very welcoming, so it's very equitable and second chance focused, which I'm a big supporter of. And so we're not saying eliminating the workforce. We're just shifting where the workforce spends the majority of their time, which is very desirable, because a lot of folks come to America to give their kids a better life. And so
yes,
when they get here, they're like, wait a minute, I don't want you breaking your back and being outside in the elements, because I did that for you. And so what we find is a lot of new coming Americans are saying, we don't want this for our kids. And so there's actually an acute labor shortage. It's a rampant problem. And so if we don't drive efficiencies, we're never going to be able to bridge that gap. And so actually this solution opens additional opportunities for employment at living wages in environments that the workforce desires now. And so we believe that actually this is a solution that, you know, essentially it's mutually beneficial.
Very nice.
Go ahead, Nathan.
Yeah, so I'd imagine that a lot of those employees would end up working in those assembly plants, factories. Then there'd still be jobs required to prep the land, of course. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I love Luke's question. I think that's a very important issue. And I'm glad that we're looking at that, because if we crushed that industry, we would destroy our economy. That's too many people that are dependent on the construction industry.
In Evelyn and I's report, you know, we focused heavily on the reintroduction of shop classes into high schools. So we essentially abandoned that when it was college or bust. But over the last 5 years, we've seen a proliferation of trades going into high school, where kids are getting their 200-hour certification. So they're coming out and they don't have to go to college and get a bunch of debt and then change their minds and be saddled with that weight. They can move right into a high-paying job with the certifications they need. They can be welders, plumbers, you know, framers, construction, all those elements. And so we're actually recommending that we go all in on this special workforce.
Well, this is residential, right?
Correct.
What about commercial?
It's commercial. Right now, there's more actual off-site building happening in hotels and in commercial products. You know, they're moving much faster. And so this is a industry-wide solution. And it's happening again. It bothers me because I'm competitive by nature. But like the Europeans, they're kicking our you-know-what in this, right? They're throwing a lot of R&D into home building, standardization off-site. And my point is we created this first. We should not be lapped by the Europeans because we can't find a way to govern ourselves out of this.
Right, okay, so you brought that up, so I'm glad you did. I have a question. I was in L.A., and I was at the Citizens M Hotel, nice hotel, and the rooms were very small, but they were very high-tech and, you know, very clean. I liked it. So, you know me, I'm always going to ask questions, and I go find the manager, and I'm like, what is this, you know. And I was like, well, how are these rooms built? And they said something about Europe, and they said China. Now, this supposedly that they take the cargo that be on the back of the ships, and they build them over there, and then they ship them in already done and just plug them in.
Yep. Like Legos.
That's insane.
Wow. So,
and we have the capacity to do that here in Colorado with Colorado businesses and Colorado labor.
Same thing, but we could do it here?
Yeah, we can do it Coloradoized.
Wow.
And I'm glad you pointed that out. I mean, you described this place as beautiful. So a lot of the misconception is that, you know, prefabricated homes are right. like the mobile homes that you're used to seeing in Florida everywhere, you know, that just blow apart in a storm. And that's not what we're talking about here, to be clear.
Wow. And we have somebody on the line, don't we? I think so. Hey, you know what? Put it like this. Evelyn, this is for you. How did you guys hook up?
Well,
I got him.
Yeah. That's an easy question. So I was regional administrator at Housing and Urban Development, and we work very closely with the public housing authorities. And so Peter was the CEO, or is the CEO, at Maker, which is Adams County.
Okay.
And so we met. It was on an initiative of President Trump. It was the Opportunity Zones. And it was our first meeting, but Peter and I just hit it off. I mean, he, as you can tell, is very intellectual. He thinks very broadly. We had a great conversation. And when Common Sense Institute approached me about doing a housing study, and they said, well, we need to find you a co-fellow, and I suggested they talk to Peter because I just think that he's one of those people that thinks outside the box.
Yeah, we love those type of people here.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I'll just have to say, not every housing authority is the same. Not all of them develop. Maker does, and they do a great job. So, you know, not every housing authority is the same, but Peter does amazing work.
Hey, Luke, go ahead. It looks like we got Daryl on the line. Go ahead and patch him in. I'm sure he has some questions. Daryl, you there?
Hey, how y'all doing this morning?
What's up, buddy? Yeah, how you doing?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
I'm over here making this delivery over at this farm. And I'm kind of curious on this because when somebody came up with a good question, they said when you mentioned affordable housing, you're saying it's about the range of 300,000 to 400,000. And I think sometime realistically it's probably going to go up higher. So if we're talking about affordable housing, then who are we talking for? Are we talking about affordable housing for just the working class people? Or what about the people in poverty? So the people in poverty, they're the ones who really need help on this affordable housing. So when we're saying that, who are we really addressing this for?
That's a great question. You know, I my passion is to house those that the market won't, right? So mainly we're doing that through rental homes. So we're helping folks that are earning $30,000 a year, sometimes even less, you know, and that's kind of in that 30% of the area median income, and really pushing that aside. So, you know, and then we're creating, and we're also been talking a lot about attainable or affordable home ownership. And so if folks can have rents that are not more than, say, 30% of their income, they can start to save the money, then tap into first-time home buyer assistance or home buyer assistance, and then they can move into those homes. Right now, there's stagnation. It's like if you're a renter, it feels like you're never going to be able to buy a home because you can't save enough money because your budget's being cannibalized by all the high rent costs, mm-hmm. plus inflation across the economy. We're not building starter homes. We used to 40% in 1980 of all the homes built. Starter homes are classified as 1,400 square feet or less. Last year, the average size of a home in America was over 2,400 square feet. And what's crazy is our demographic, our size of households is actually going down. So we're building bigger homes for less people, and we're building less homes. And so we're just, our priorities are completely off the rails. And so to come back to what the gentleman just asked, which is absolutely correct, is we have to produce more rental units. We also have to produce more starter homes so that we can create deeper affordability so folks aren't getting gouged on their rents, so that they can actually have a rainy day fund, put some money down for a home, and then partake in the equity upside that is the American dream of home ownership.
Can I just jump in too? Because I think this is important, because a lot of this is definitional. And so we talk about affordable housing, which is, you know, at a certain area median income. That is like a kind of almost formulaic, which is different from housing affordability or workforce housing, market rate, all of these things. So I think people get sometimes confused because we talk about affordable housing, but that is actually a definition from HUD that is housing people at lower incomes.
Yeah, at Maker, our average two-bedroom rent right now is about $1,200. Right. So, and Westminster, the average rent is over 2,000.
Right.
The same. So that's our mission in action. And we don't use a lot of federal funds to do that either. Like the way we build affordable housing and this might be too, a little wonky as well, but like, you know, it's a market-based system. And so that's, again, how Evelyn and I, you know, we find a lot of common ground amongst the ideologies. And so, but to the gentleman's question is we have to produce rental homes that are available to folks earning 30K, 40K, 50K. You know, 60K, the area median income right now for a family of four in the Denver, you know, kind of front range right. is about $101,000 a year, right? So when we say 30% of that, we can do the math. And so we definitely want to emphasize the importance of a caller's question because he's spot on. We have to do both. And the way we do both is actually coming back to the land use planning and zoning and building codes. Our salvation for both types of product is the journey to that salvation is through both those zoning and building codes.
Well, location, and will that affect the price of the home? Like if it's versus in Denver,
oh yes,
Castle Rock,
scarcity of land,
Parker.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It depends on where we're building. Land plays a big part.
You hear that music, man? Hey, Luke's saying, "Hey, we got to go to break. Got to go to break." It's 560 KLZ. I'm United. Reggie Rocco. We'll be right back.
You're listening to KLZ 560, your home station.
Hey folks, Matthew Dark here, and you're going to love my new show. Starting October 24th, join me and my network of health experts, political leaders, and child advocates as we digest the day's news and sift through the hypocrisy. The Matthew Dark Show is interactive, so callers, let your voice be heard as we talk about COVID, politics, and issues important to you. The Matthew Dark Show, 9 a.m. Monday through Wednesday, right here on KLZ 560 AM.
Hi, this is Al Smith of Golden Eagle Financial. Near the end of the year, it's a good time to come into the office and do some tax planning and financial planning that's sensitive for the end of the year. Also, I wanted to let you know about an upcoming event. There'll be a Lunch and Learn in Bennett, Colorado at the library in Bennett on November 3rd from 1 till 3. We'll be talking about a lot of important financial matters that relate to retirement. I think you'll find this really interesting. If you'd like to attend that, give my office a call, 303-744-1128.
You've seen and heard a lot regarding the candidates who are running for office. Did you know that on your November 2022 ballot, there are 11 statewide questions, plus county, city, school district, and tax questions that affect your lives and your pocketbooks? Kim Munson here. We can help. My team and I have spent almost 200 hours researching, compiling, formatting, and publishing the Kim Munson Issues Voter's Guide for We the People. Go to my website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com, to request your copy. Be an informed voter, not an influenced voter.
We have such incredibly loyal listeners on KLZ. You faithfully patronize our advertising partners, keeping us on the air. They are grateful, and so are we. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling and visiting our advertisers. Thank you for telling them you heard them on KLZ. We appreciate you.
One, two, three.
Let's go!
Woo! Boy, them beats be bumping on. Y'all didn't know I produced all this music, did you? 560 KLZ, I'm a Uniter. We got some special guests in house, and I got some questions here, you know, for one of these people in here that's a liberal. Could you guess who it is? Is it
actually
the person?
No, it's kind of hard to guess who it is, to be honest with you. I was just thinking that you know, for a liberal, he doesn't really sound like the dyed-in-the-wool liberal
I'm used
to talking to a lot of times.
He has a lot of common sense.
Common sense, which I love, and we can do a lot of great things together that
you
way.
You guys are going to get him in trouble.
Yeah, we know. How did you become a liberal and why?
You know, I think a lot of it goes around the kitchen tables, right? And as you wake up and your mentors and those that
born black Democrat, like that.
You know, so mom being an emergency room nurse and working in public health and dad being, you know, basically a musician, you know, we talked a lot about politics at the table. And I think the difference, you know, for us, it's like I'm a big believer in the government needing to subsidize that for which the market will not serve, as I mentioned previously. And You know, I think also, I do believe that government can function at a higher level than we have historically experienced. And I think that, you know, for me, the investment in governments, I'm a bit bigger of a believer as a liberal and a progressive, as Evelyn and I discussed this before. And so, you know, for me, I do believe poverty is systemic. I do believe that there is impacts of systemic racism on poverty that we need to intervene with, that probably at a deeper level than what would be most comfortable for a free market conservative. But for me, you know, a bad policy knows no letter, in front of your name when it comes to your party. The low-income housing tax credit that I referenced before, which is the only way we develop affordable housing in this country, is a Reagan product. Mm-hmm. And so, I think that when it gets down to it, if we retreat to our ideological silos, we make really bad decisions. But if we test those hypotheses with folks, that is, where we come together with dignity, warmth, and grace, and we don't attack the individual, we attack the policy, we attack the societal issue, then I find a lot of common ground with folks like Evelyn and my colleagues at the Common Sense Institute.
So do these homes have alarms? Because it's very, very violent in America right now.
Well, you know, I say that housing is national security. So, you know, that's why I came into this business. I love playing with adult Legos, right? Building these big buildings. The math's not hard, right? It's the politics. It's people's fears. So with a lack of housing, folks feel that their society doesn't suit them, right? So if you're an 8-year-old boy, you're an 8-year-old girl, and you've just been evicted, you're living in your car, you're experiencing trauma, pain, and abuse, you know, that gang might seem very attractive to you for a place of respite and love. But what you realize pretty quickly is that you've actually been hoodwinked, right? And right. By the time you try to get out, you've been incarcerated. And so, you know, our society crushes that society that you've sought out to be able to feel like you're loved and important. And so for me, you know, addressing anti-poverty through Maslow's hierarchy, right, saying housing is the foundation, will improve our societal experience and reduce crime. It's true that we are experiencing an uptick in crime. I believe that we haven't fully quantified what the pandemic has done to us as Homo sapiens, as individuals, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're rapidly changing behaviorally, and we're trying to grapple with it in real time. And I'm happy that we're talking about it.
Okay, so I will ask this question. We're all adults here. We're all friends. How do you think the state of America is right now, and why it's like this? And do you think it's because of the current administration?
I'm an optimist, and okay. I believe in America, right? You know, so I mentioned I worked for over a decade as a civilian contractor in national security. My mother was a nurse. My dad was in the Army for a bit. You know, service is in our blood, and I believe that America can overcome any of its challenges, and that when, you know, as I mentioned with Churchill before, is that when we are pushed and we respond, we could look at Pearl Harbor, we could look at these moments. So I believe in America. Here's the other thing that I'd say is that we need another party, right? We yes. need another party. Oh, because God. If I went to Evelyn and said, hey, Ev, I'm a conservative now, she'd be like, ooh, do I know you? Like, who are you? That's weird. But if I was like, hey, I just joined the Yang Party
I would consider myself successful.
Right? She's like, are you sure you want to come? But so my thought here is that, you know, we are very tribally based as people. We use it as a defense mechanism. The world is a dangerous and scary place, and it has been throughout the majority of our existence on this planet. And so it's really hard for me to say to you, like, you know, conservatives are bad, become a Democrat. But if we give other options, we start to disrupt that narrative. And Evelyn and I, one of our influences that we look to help guide our decisions in this and maybe break through the high conflict of housing development is a book called High Conflict by a really cool author named Amanda Ripley, who studies a lot of political dynamics. And so, you know, for me, I'm not going to say that because I'm not going to say it's because of the current administration. I'm going to say it's because we haven't allowed ourselves to modernize, to be, in lockstep with the size of our country and the unique beauty of what drives our constitutional democracy.
Go ahead.
I think that's exactly right. So I have the same kind of concerns about the parties. I think that we're too deeply entrenched in those, and now you're either on one side or the other. We can't get together and talk. And honestly, I'm starting to feel like they're kind of in cahoots, and I'm believing a little bit more in the one-party system.
You know, and he blows me up with this all the time, so yeah, he's telling the truth.
I think they're in cahoots. I think they just want power and control, and to hell with the rest of us.
Yeah, once you're in the VIP room, you never want to leave.
Exactly. What so y'all even know about they the pretend VIP room? To be adversaries, but I really do think that you know they just want to maintain power. I've worked with candidates that are third party, and the entire system works against them to keep them silent. And that's a problem. So while I totally agree, it's going to be so hard to break these parties down and create new parties so that we can all kind of take up these new parties and
Great people in every party. I mean, like, that's the whole, absolutely, that's our whole concept, but I'm a uniter. We go out and we seek, really, you know, in the streets everywhere, people that have common sense, that are logical, and that actually want to do better for people. So that's right
up there. And willing to compromise and say, hey, you know, be vulnerable. Like when we run businesses, right, you got to be vulnerable. You got to be transparent. It starts with the CEO, right? You got to look in the mirror. And that's what we need from our leaders. And the party construct devalues that, yeah, right? And so I think the other thing, it would be ranked choice voting, you know, again, because that drives compromise. It forces political parties and candidates to seek out common ground so that they can peel off voters that normally wouldn't come out to the ballot for them.
Do you think we're close to war?
I do not.
With Russia, or do you mean just with internally?
Russia, China, whatever, period. The whole are we close?
Oh, well, I thought in reference to Sybil, but you know, we're always on the precipice of war. You know, the you know, power, as we've been discussing, is, and prestige and time and treasure. It's always there. America, you know, this is my opinion. We have to be a presence for good. We have to be that shining capital on the hill. And if not, there will always be regimes looking to exploit that absence, which will then create geopolitical uncertainty and volatility. And so, yeah, absolutely. We're always a minute away from the abyss there. And we don't want to send our beautiful, you know, men and women overseas to fight a war that,
I hear that,
is very difficult to win regardless.
And if I can tie this back into the housing stuff, I feel like it's a great way to think about it, because you had mentioned it a bit previously. If you feel like you have either nothing to lose, or if you feel like the country you're in isn't looking out for you, isn't doing enough for you, you're going to be more inclined to go in the direction of those extremes. You know, a person with nothing to lose is a very dangerous person. I make 40 some odd thousand, 38 after taxes a year, which is all right. But you look at the average housing price in Colorado at $700,000, and it's like, what are my options? What do I do? Sit around and wait for a housing crisis or a recession? It's like, if you know,
you can go to New York. There's a pretty nice tent city up there.
Yeah, get a tent set up. It's like, if you feel like you have nothing, then what are you fighting for? I feel like if you get more people in houses, you have a castle, you have a home, you have a place that you don't want to see, you know, be taken down or destroyed. You don't want to go to war anymore because now you have something to lose. I feel like that's an important perspective to keep in mind.
Absolutely. And we tried that in the 90s, right? You know, with equal opportunity housing stuff, and try to, you know, build up the base and get more people in houses. But then it got really out of control really quickly.
We definitely need affordable housing. There is no doubt about that. We definitely need that. So I applaud what you guys are doing in reference to that all the way. But I'm just really concerned about safety, and the economy. You know, it's, you know, my Range Rover, I can't keep filling $100 every time I go to the gas tank. I'm going to be borrowing your car, Luke.
Which car? Both of mine broke. I don't
know. Okay. Anthony, I know right you now. Got a Jeep, right?
I just had to lend one of my cars out, too.
Oh,
so now I'm down
man.
To one car.
So I'm stuck.
I only have one car. How are you guys getting, like, more than one car here?
Hey, don't ask questions. Come on, now.
Okay, how many American cars are at this table? How many American cars?
One. Me, I have one.
I don't buy American, no.
Oh,
I got German, which is American, and I got
American.
Japanese, which is doing a bit better.
So what
still
does that
not.
Tell you right there? And I
that
can't
I'm
be
the only
hypocrite.
Patriot. That's what that tells me. Jeez, guys, come on now.
I'm telling you, the Japanese know how to make a vehicle. Toyota, Honda, Lexus.
Hey, I have no problem with the Honda, range, with the Batmobile. I love the Rover. Great. So,
in all fairness, I do love my Hondas too.
They're great. They're awesome. We're all out of luck here.
Wow. So what about production? Period. In America, whether it's gas, oil, energy, cars, do we need to bring that up in America?
Yeah, the more we can put people to work and start producing stuff on our own, you know, we've talked about this before. I don't want to be terribly dependent on all the other countries. That leads us down a really bad problem. You want to work with the other countries, right? But you don't want to make it so that you are completely dependent.
Right.
And, you know, and then if something happens, like, you know, for instance, you know, we were getting a ton of wheat and you know, oil from these countries that are at war with each other, and
right,
then it gets
right.
shut off, where are we at? If
right,
we lose
exactly.
our ability to
like the stuff
the
that
microchips.
Was in COVID.
Yeah.
Remember they were threatening, we're not going to give you the ingredients to.
Correct.
But you know, we have a super duper patriot conservative on the line. So y'all hold on. Patrion, Evelyn, you there?
Yep, I sure am. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Go ahead. Fire away.
Yeah. I wanted to weigh in on the affordable housing thing because this is a very good discussion. And I am very much for ownership. Ownership is what makes communities quality communities. And so here's my recipe. Number one, I think I don't remember which person mentioned the overregulation, but we are overregulated when it comes to building houses. I was a general contractor for my own house, and I experienced it firsthand. Many people who are buying from a developer never see the regulations that they're required to keep, which does nothing but boost up the cost of the home. The other thing I wanted to say is that I am very much frustrated a person that's skeptical on a lot of these beautification, gentrification of cities, developments, because my parents and a lot of people, a lot of my friends' parents got started in smaller homes that were in the inner city. I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, in the inner city of Cleveland on a flag lot. And the home was not pristine, but we had flowers in the yard, and there were it was affordable for my folks. Well, that gave them a start, and then they were able as they improved that house, and as we moved out, they were able to gain. Equity, and they were able to move up. Well, when you scrape homes for a developer because the house is too small or they don't look as fancy as they ought to, and then you put in very expensive places to live, the people that were there that had their small businesses, their nail business, their hair business, or whatever, their small business in ownership, and maybe they own their small home, when they are chased out, they have no option to do but to rent, and they can't buy anything with whatever has been given to them.
Okay, so Evie,
not enough money. Okay,
Evie, hold on, don't hang up. I'm going to let I have someone that wants to respond to you.
Okay, fine.
Yeah, Evelyn, this is Peter. Thanks for your call and the comments. I couldn't agree more. You know, we need to allow entrepreneurship to thrive within homes. You know, this is very common. Again, I keep calling about Europe, but they keep copying us, and then we stop doing those things. But allowing small businesses, deregulating, making it easier for businesses to start and run out of their home. We had a requirement coming out of World War II where you had to build lodging, basically a boarding for for the troops coming back. So we had our own version of ADUs, accessory dwelling units, back throughout the 40s and 50s and 60s, and we've outlawed that. And so we've eliminated the options for homeowners to maximize their holding and also benefit their community in the manner that you've discussed. Also, you know, confirmation bias is another thing that we use as humans to make sense of the world, right? So we could say, well, I see cranes everywhere. It's a building boom, but because I see them. And where I'm going with this is that's not actually true. And what you said there was about, you know, the architectural dynamic of a smaller home might not be exactly as great as newer homes or what people aesthetically feel is pleasing, but beauty's in the eye of the beholder. And what we've done is, you know, there's been a lot of trades. Folks that have said, well, you know, no one wants to live in that home. No one wants to live in a slot home. No one wants to live in that home. But actually what they're saying is, I don't want to live in that home.
Right,
so what I'm going to do is make it impossible and illegal for anyone else to live in that home. And so, you know, if that's a liberal or conservative dynamic, I don't know. But to me, it's not American.
I agree 100%. The other thing I want to say is the fact that developers are not building multifamily ownership of townhouses and condos and that sort of thing, because there's been so many frivolous lawsuits that they said, wait a minute,
I don't think
that anymore. And I would think that it would be better to have some of these smaller areas with smaller homes in inner cities to allow those areas to be built up, kind of renovated.
Hey, Evie.
We're
coming up to the break. Hang on, we'll get back with you when we get back. 560 KLZ, I'm a uniter.
This is AM 560 KLZ, your home station.
Hi, this is Adam Holtz, and you're listening to Plugged In.
We're here to negotiate your peaceful surrender.
I'm not peaceful, nor do I surrender. I kneel before no one.
In the new movie Black Adam, Dwayne Johnson pulls on the spandex suit of a new superpowered do-gooder. DC Comics' latest special effects extravaganza gives us Black Adam's origin story, one that goes back 5,000 years. And it turns out, he's got some rough edges to file down as he unleashes his vengeance on the story's bad guys. Black Adam is an intense PG-13 movie, one that almost got an R rating for its violence. Add in spiritual talk about gods and demigods, and you've got a story that presents some real issues for families with young DC fans. So we're giving Black Adam a 2.5 out of 5 for family friendliness. Read the full review at PluggedIn.com/radio. I'm Adam Holtz for Focus on the Family's Plugged In Movie Review.
In retirement, it's all about income, your money, making money, while still controlling your principal. If your portfolio has recently taken a big hit, you're not set up for retirement income.
We're Front Range Financial.
And that's what we do. We position portfolios to generate retirement income. Learn how it's done. Tune in our Front Range Financial Hour right here, Sunday mornings at 11.
560 KLZ, I'm a uniter, Reggie Rocco, Luke. What's up, Anthony? And we got Evelyn and Peter here. Say, look, Luke, you have a question. I know we want to get that out the way. And then also, Anthony, I want to get to your question as well, sure, or a statement. So, Luke, why don't you fire away?
Yeah, my father actually texted me because he's listening to the show right now. And he had a great question for you guys. He wanted to know, do you actively have lenders that will work with your model of affordable housing? Do you have anyone proprietary, or is it just... Because depends on, you know, I imagine how informed a lender is on the product that's being offered here. Do you have something like that? Is that, you know, what's going on there?
Yeah, I there's going to be nuance between rental product and home ownership product, but there is tremendous pent up demand. There's been a mass movement of capital throughout the pandemic from the street, from Wall Street, from real estate investment trusts, et cetera, into this space. It's Bobby Turner, famous investor, West Coast, you know, looks at it as a triple bottom line. There's tremendous demand.
Okay, Anthony, go ahead.
So
I wanted to get back to the starter home percentages, and kind of Evie was alluding to that as well, you know, that there were good starter homes out there and people could work their way up. What were those percentages that you mentioned before?
Yeah, so in 1980, 40% of all the homes built in the United States were considered starter homes, 1,400 square feet or less. Last year, less than 9%, and the number's going down. And so my recommendation, and we've said this, Evelyn and I have said this, and I've called on the governor, and I'd call on every mayor and every elected official in this state to stand up a Colorado Starter Home Challenge, where we prioritize the creation and we target, because what we target, we create. And so I think we could break through this malaise and this local control versus statewide intervention dynamic. And if we can, you know, get moving and say to ourselves, what's precluding us from doing that? And what we'll find is it's things that are fully within our control. And so if local governments want to maintain autonomy over their housing decisions, they're going to have to show the Coloradan public that they're ready for this challenge. And they're going to have to step up, not 5 years from now, not 2 years from now, this year. And they're going to have to join together, and it has to be regional. And I think they can accomplish it, but they're going to have to answer some tough questions. And what they'll find is that there's probably a greater constituency of support than they're allowing themselves to believe currently.
I'll just jump in really quickly, and this is something that Evelyn mentioned, which is a great name, by the way, but and Peter mentioned it at the top, is that we really do need to fix our construction defect laws. And so back in 2017, the legislature addressed it, and what we found out is it just hasn't fixed it. And that is really preventing
builders
from building the townhomes and the condos that we actually need that could fill this starter home spot.
Okay, so I have a question. I get approved. I'm into affordable housing. I get a better job or hit the lottery. Do I have to leave?
I'll just say this, because this is one of the issues that we tried to fix under Dr. Carson, because there, housing authorities do have to review your income. Okay. And when you have an increase in income, then your percentage increases. And what's the timeline for that? It was 1 year. We tried to change it to 3 years because we wanted people to be able to acquire more money to save up to move to a different home. It's a little bit of a perverse incentive, because once you start making money, now you have to pay more for your rent. So why would you do that? Right. So this is one of the things that we tried to get through. It did not happen in time, unfortunately.
You know, and I think it's a lot of folks, you know, they're really not, home ownership's not for them, right? There's a lot of risk, you know, generally you have to budget 1% of your total home's value every year for capital needs, for, you know, repairs. And that's a tall task for a lot of folks. And so, you know, we have to think about, you know, what are folks' ability to compete in the open market? And should they stay in their homes for as long as they need to? I think that a vast majority of extremely low-income folks are not necessarily, they have all the elements to be a successful homeowner, but they're not going to have the income. And so, you know, we're going to have to change a lot of other things from a subsidy perspective if we want to get homeowners. For extremely low-income Coloradans, folks earning, you know, below 30% of area median income. But what we want to do is we don't want to create homelessness, right? Because once a Coloradan finds themselves unhoused, it's really difficult for them to become housed once again. And it's very expensive for all of us to be able to solve that. So upstream solutions, when we're talking about how do we support kiddos, how do we support families, how do we support women, right? That you know, that have a lot of societal elements working against them so that they can thrive. Daycare is a huge issue, right? You know, so if you can't put your kiddos in daycare, you can't go to work. And so I think we have opportunities coming out of the pandemic when we look at teleworking. And so when we talk about homelessness, we're really talking about families and kids.
Well, you know what, you guys? I like this guy. And, you know, I love Evelyn. So, you know, I wish we had more time. You guys going to have to come back. You're going to have to come back for real.
I say when we get off the air here, we all ride up to the Capitol and start knocking some heads together.
Yeah, here we go.
Done.
There we go. All right, well, you know how we do it.
Three, two, one.
And we're out of here.
Yeah. It's that time. We out of here. You've been listening to KLZ 560.
560 AM. I'm a Unite to Reggie Ruffo. Yeah, it's fun. We will tackle the issues. We will unite the country every week, every Friday morning from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. It's about love, y'all. Have a wonderful morning and a great day.
Yeah, we're Uniters. Yeah, we're Uniters. Yeah.
That's right, Colorado.